This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You're listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Jessica Jones. iFanboy podcast on Jessica Jones. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Oh.
And our special guest co-host this week is former iFanboy writer Mike Romo.
Hey, guys.
Hey, it's Mike Romo, everybody.
I'm here.
It's a holiday miracle.
That's right.
So we're talking the Netflix series Jessica Jones. It's the second of the five-series deal between Marvel Studios and Netflix. The first was Daredevil. We talked about that last year.
Was that last year?
Earlier this year.
Like February. It was like February, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So.
And now we're talking about Jessica Jones, and this is part of the grim and gritty world of Marvel Studios that takes place pretty much in New York's Hell's Kitchen.
Supposedly.
And features some more street-level characters. And this is Jessica Jones, the character made famous by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gatos' Alias series from 15 years ago?
Don't say it like
she's
that.
Nearly.
I think it's 13 years ago.
Yeah, just about. Early 2000s.
That was the series that kicked off Marvel's Max line, the more adult line of superhero comics, or just comics in general. And now we see the Jessica Jones series. It starred Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, and a whole bunch of other people we'll talk about soon.
Before we get started, we should probably warn everybody that if you haven't watched all 13 episodes of Jessica Jones yet, we're going to talk about specifically what happened. So there's your spoiler warning. So from here on out, we might ruin something for you. So deal with it, or go back and watch it. And if you want to be like us, get very stressed trying to watch as many episodes in a shorter period of time so that we can do this podcast before we all break for the holidays, because apparently Marvel Studios and Netflix hate us and their scheduling.
It was a bizarre schedule.
I get it.
It's a very busy time of the year.
But the thing is that like it came out a week before Thanksgiving, and this is a different discussion. But I hate the drop the whole season in one moment and let people binge watch because it's so stressful.
But also, you're talking about a weekend where you can't really, at least for most people, you can't spend it watching TV. You're with your family.
And furthermore, what I will point out is that in watching all 13 episodes in a row, a 1 minute and 47 second opening credits is just mean.
You gotta skip forward, buddy.
Because I couldn't always skip. I was either on a tablet or I was on my phone or whatever. And skipping was hard. And the thing is that also it's a very long and boring intro. And it's nice the first time, but I would have liked just a 20 second one from episode two onward. You know, it's very.
Yeah, I mean,
very indulgent.
You gotta assume that people. Let's talk about this later.
Okay.
So going into the series, I know that talking to Mike before we watched it, that you were very concerned with Kristen Ritter, who cast as Jessica Jones.
I was, and it wasn't anything. like or dislike. I mean, I had only really seen her in Breaking Bad, and I guess she was the B in Apartment B or the whatever the
– Don't trust the B in Apartment 23.
The B asterisk. Yeah. So I didn't – what was really interesting is when I first saw her, I just – maybe it's just me getting old. I just thought she was so young, and I had always sort of thought of Jessica Jones sort of older – late 30s, early 40s, a little bit more bedraggled, and then
seasoned.
And when you look at Geddes' art in Alias, that was definitely the sort of disheveled. I mean, she really owned the drinking problem.
I never got the sense she was that old. I would have placed her in the comics at least late 20s, early 30s, but definitely seasoned and definitely has been through some shit, you know?
That's right. And that being said, you can't help but bring what you read into when you see an adaptation. So, but what was great is that all of that stuff, all of my hesitations about her really melted away because she owned this character so much that I just sort of forgot about my previous conceptions of Jessica.
That ties into what you were about to say, Connor. So it's like, are we just going to say initially what we thought of it?
Yeah,
or how do you want to? So Mike, you liked it.
I really liked it. I mean, I have nitpicks as we all might. I mean, but overall, I thought it was thrilling, captivating. It made me really, really sort of depressed the first couple of episodes. Like, I watched it by myself and was really, really aware of how much by myself I was because she is such a lone character. I loved it. And so I'm curious to see what you guys thought.
I thought it was really good. It was strong. I thought the first half was much stronger than the second half. I thought it got a little wonky.
Agreed.
In the second half. But I think I watched the first seven in two different blocks of viewing, and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. And then I thought the next five or so, or 13, so it was 13 episodes, so the next six were a little uneven. But overall, I thought it was really strong. She was really wonderful.
Yeah.
And I had the same thing watching her in the beginning. I thought, well, this is not at all how I picture Jessica Jones. But by the end of it, I sort of had let that fall to the wayside, but I got over that.
Yeah, so I liked it. I didn't love it. I have complaints that are probably more than I would, that are probably a grade higher than nitpick. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very good. I thought that Kristen Ritter, really? Because she's always played this kind of like, you know, I didn't watch Breaking Bad, so I don't know how she was in Breaking Bad, but at least from when she was in Don't Trust the Bee, and she was also, you know, how like some actors hit the CW and they're like trying to make them work. You know, they give them guest star roles in like Smallville or something like that.
Right.
Then they're on Supernatural next season, you know, like that sort of thing. so when she first kind of emerged, I knew her from there, and she always kind of played this kind of, you know, a certain type that was very opposite of that. That said, I was impressed at how she made Jessica Jones her own.
Yes. She's very good in it.
She's very, very good. And also, I like going through the things that I liked immensely, and which I think comes as no surprise, but David Tennant as the villain, as Killraven, or as we know him, Purple Man, stole the show and is fantastic, but he's fantastic, so that's no surprise. But then also the casting of Luke Cage with Lamon Bishop from The Good Wife.
Mike Coulter,
who I loved him on The Good Wife, and I think he was even better in this. I thought the casting was really, really strong and really, really enjoyed it. But overall, you know, Connor, I kind of agree with you. Like, the way I look at it, like, I look at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and it's just, those are just nerds going, I can't believe we have Jessica Jones, you know? Like, it's not, I don't think it's a 98% or a 92% or whatever it is.
No.
In fact, I don't even think this is better than Daredevil.
I think
a big problem with it is that, honestly, this story could have been done in 6 or 8 episodes.
Absolutely right.
Yep.
Yes. My comment was going to be, it felt like they were like, we have to do 13 of these? And they sort of stuff into the latter part that was really, I thought, distracted.
The latter part got really, really stretchy in terms
of... Really stretchy. And the thing was, is that I went back to look at the episode recaps of Daredevil because I felt as if Daredevil was perfect at 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell if Daredevil had smaller arcs within the 13 episodes that made it work, or if it was just all getting to the kingpin.
Like,
there were more loops. There were more loops in Daredevil. There were like 2 or 3 episodes where they would beginning, middle, and end these plots. And so
And you had that, the overarching Kingpin, you know, trying to deal with Fisk. But like, if Jessica Jones, it was just all about Kilraven from get-go. Right. And I felt as if we never had any distractions that would make the 13 episodes feel justified.
And we did. We had a couple, like, they weren't really, didn't really pay off, like the couple that tried to kill her by hiring her to be.
That had to be, for me, was by far the weakest thing.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I remember
when I used to watch 24, it was like when his daughter was stuck in the mountains with the bobcat or whatever.
Yeah.
The cougar thing, I was just like, because this is kind of like screenwriting 101. It's got to be worth something. There was no follow-up with whatever that, it was cool, yeah, the event, blah, blah, blah. But like, it felt like it came out of nowhere. And yeah. I mean, I had other problems with the sister plot, I couldn't have cared less about. I mean, I wanted to actually fast forward whenever that actor and that character was on screen.
You mean Hellcat?
The upstairs? No, no, the upstairs neighbor.
Oh, yeah. Neighbors. Yeah, I actually have. Yeah. That's one of my notes about the annoying neighbors got way too much screen time.
Oh, yep. Come on! It was like ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I thought the lawyer's divorce story got really repetitive.
Yeah, that was the thing that drove me absolutely crazy. Was that like I saw from a mile away that the lawyer's divorce was going to tie into Kilraven at some point, and it wasn't until episode 9 or 10 episode 10 or 11 that it finally did. But my God, every time her annoying ex-wife or wife came on and. Like, I just did not care about it at all. And it just – and it was taking – and, like, that's the thing is, like, I was looking at the run times of these episodes were, like –
53, 54.
50, there was a couple of 55s. There was a 57 in there. Like, these are long episodes, and someone needed to pump the brakes on the lawyer storyline. And then also just the – which I can only assume to lay the groundwork for season 2 of Daredevil with the Punisher, but the insertion of Nuke – cool, but like that went on way too long.
Let's talk about him as a character, Will Simpson, who starts off, we meet him as a New York City cop who is Kilgrave controls and has him try to kill Trish
Walker.
Trish Walker, who we'll get to her in a minute too. He tried to kill her, that doesn't work out, and ends up being racked with guilt because he tried to murder someone and becomes sort of part of their group, sort of falls for Trish, and then is revealed to be psychotic, and if you know the comics, he's actually the character called Nuke, who has an American flag tattoo on his face and is another failed super soldier. He's another failed Captain America type.
I totally missed that.
You'd only know if you know the character from the comics.
There was a couple of gimmies, Mike, that you could have – if you picked up on.
Most people wouldn't know the character.
But the name Simpson was the name of the character. Later on, when we find out that he's part of a experimental government soldier program, and he gets red and blue pills, Nuke was give me the reds, like that's he needed.
Right.
And then finally, when he lit the fire to burn down the weirdo torture room he built, his Zippo was an American flag that looked just like the face tattoo of the character. And so, like, actually, honestly, that was the tell that I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's Nuke. So, and that's the thing is that, like, I liked him in the beginning half of the series.
Exactly.
Like, I thought he was a great member of the team, and you had this whole thing working. But then the whole super soldier thing just went out of control, if you ask me. And that was the closest thing we had to a mini arc, but it didn't pay off in any degree, I thought, in terms of the larger story. And it had to be this is the tie-in to The Punisher and Daredevil.
Well, maybe. We don't know that.
That's my guess.
I thought there was going to be a scene at the end of the last episode that would kind of hint at all the stuff with the IGH or whatever in the super soldier thing.
Well, that's interesting. So IGH is not mutant growth hormone, obviously. It's not MGH. So are we saying it's inhuman growth hormone?
Oh, God.
Are they?
Oh God!
That's my guess, simply because they've you know made the Inhumans into the mutants in the cinematic universe.
Oh God! I didn't even think about that.
I hate
you so much, Connor.
My thoughts on him were actually I thought the opposite. I didn't like him at first at all because I thought he was not believable as a New York City cop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I thought his voice and persona didn't really work. And you know why, Mike? Because he's Australian.
Oh my God! I can't. What a shocker!
so is Patsy, by the way.
Yeah,
so is Patsy.
Patsy's also Australian, but Mike is more upset about the male actors because he's
I
an
really
actor.
Am. Just because clearly there were no Americans that they could cast in New York to be a cop. It's a hard one to cast.
I just thought he wasn't believable. Every time he'd show up in his uniform, I thought this guy doesn't have the demeanor or the voice or anything that reminds me of a New York City cop. But I thought in the middle, I thought he worked in the middle when he was sort of helping them, and he was. Former Special Forces, so he led that whole attempt to abduct Kilgrave in the beginning, which I thought was a great sequence.
Yeah.
When he became the unhinged Nuke character, that's when I became less interested.
Well, that was his best one, when he was, they had the little special forces moment, because he at least gave it enough credibility that you thought the plan was going to work. And absolutely. When it fell apart, you were like, oh shit.
But, and there was, that was something. The turn in episode 10 drove me crazy.
What was that? I don't remember.
Because episode 10 was, okay, so they capture Kilgrave, they put him in the weird.
So he kills the cop?
Yeah, when he killed the cop, okay, like, like that was like came out of nowhere, and I thought he was under Kilgrave's control again.
Well,
but no,
because he was on the drugs again. They said that he would go crazy if he kept on if he didn't take the downers, and he didn't take.
Yeah.
So he just kept taking the uppers, the reds.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that surprised, because he was at that point established as being a nut job, but on the whole, I thought he was a very weird character.
Very weird, very, very weird, and yeah, I agree with you. But yeah,
he was really the only one of the main people. And main people I call Jessica Jones, Trish, Cage, Kilgrave, and Will. I thought those are the main four.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the lawyer who Carrie Ann Moss played was in it a lot. But
What about Malcolm?
I actually liked Malcolm.
Yeah, I liked
the neighbor. He was fun to watch.
He was the good neighbor.
Yeah, he was great.
No, but that I think we should talk. That leads into the discussion of Kilgrave, because Kilgrave affects that character and makes him more likable.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought Kilgrave was one of the most disturbing. I mean, he is in the comics too, but one of the most disturbing villains we've seen on screen in terms of superhero stories.
He was fantastic. I mean, we already knew the Alias story, what he did as Purple Man was just screwed up, and I was curious how far they were willing to take it on the show.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, they never
as far as you want them to take it.
Yeah, they never called him Purple Man. They just put him in purple suits, which I thought was smart and genius. Yeah. Leave it as Kilgrave, and then Tennant. Like, I don't watch Doctor Who, and I've only heard, and I don't watch
Broadchurch.
No, Broadchurch. Yeah, I don't watch anything else. I literally don't watch anything else he's ever been in.
Yeah.
But he is
amazing.
Fantastic. I mean, we've been joking already, but it's been a week now, and I just hear in my head him going, Jessica! You know, like, it's just like...
And I mean, parenthetically, Broadchurch is, especially the first season, is truly worth watching if you haven't seen it.
Add it to the list.
What's wonderful, though, is he played it so many different notes in the same key where you could see... Like, just how much fun he had, sadistic fun in being creative with his powers. Like, you just got the sense that this guy has lived this way for a while and was always trying to one-up himself in terms of all these booby traps and the way he controlled people. And there was an elegance and an artistry as opposed to just, he wasn't one note. He's a great actor, but just how comfortable he was using his powers, this almost... These throwaway lines, but he knew exactly what the implications would be, were terrific. And the writers clearly had a blast figuring out just how far they could take these situations. Like one of the many scenes, but obviously the one in the cop station is terrific.
Yes.
Right? The way it unfolds. And what's great is that you're right there with Jessica trying to figure out what's the trigger? What's going to happen? Right. What would I do? There's a lot of wonderful moments where you really, really empathize with Jessica, because she's just trying to figure it out as well. And she there are a lot of times that she doesn't figure it out that well. And it's awesome. He was terrific.
Well, I think what it shows even better than the page is that how terrifying mind control is.
Yeah.
Just to see it happen, you know, throw this coffee in your face, jump off this ledge, you know, and it happens to such casualness, but it's so terrifying, and it's so, I got a real visceral sense of helplessness that Jessica had, and I thought Kirsten Ritter did a great job with that. Was you literally cannot do anything. You can't countermand his programming. You can't stop the guy from, you can't do anything.
Right.
And it's so frustrating. It's not like the normal superhero thing where you can punch your way out of trouble.
Right.
You can't punch your way out of trouble with Kilgrave.
And what's great is that we're in these movies and TV shows with all these special effects and all these powers and all these heroes flying around and doing all this stuff, but the simplest one to film is the one that's most disturbing and arguably the most powerful.
Yes.
So it's like this wonderful contrast to kind of the big budget explosions that we've been seeing that we can't identify with, but then when you see these people doing things with their hands, but you see the fear in their eyes. I mean, when they couldn't blink, you know,
or the guy who made stand against against the fence outside the club, and then we saw him again later on, still standing there.
Yeah, yeah,
that was a great That was a great device to show him again.
They really nailed his powers, and they just got it down in such a way that is so, like, and yeah, and Mike, you make a great point. I mean, like, we've already, and they, again, you know, it takes place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so there's references. They always reference the Hulk for some reason, the green guy and the rest of them, you know, like, and things like that.
Well, I think if you were in that world, you'd be talking about the Hulk a lot, too.
Yeah, I guess maybe. Who knows? But but what's interesting is that, yeah, I mean, like, this is far. I mean, yeah, you know, the aliens attacking the city is crazy, but this is horrifying when you think about it. And just, like, to think of the level of what they were able to do, he was able to get Luke Cage under his control, and that was horrifying. And speaking of that, every time Luke Cage was not on the screen, I was going, when is Luke Cage coming back?
Unbelievable.
Well, he's only in half the episodes. It was interesting.
I know.
He's in a lot in the beginning because Jessica's stalking him for reasons we find out later. And then he goes away for, like, the whole middle.
I know.
Third. And it was funny because when he came back, that was the moment I was like, hey, where's Luke Cage been? So for me, it was timed perfectly where I had missed him enough so that when he came back, I was super psyched for it.
He's just great. He like, talk about perfect casting. That is perfect casting. And they got the sex right. They got, like, I mean, like, everything, all the notes from the comic, whether, you know, Jessica and Luke's relationship, you know, Killraven and all the craziness, you know, although
Killgrave.
You see, the thing is that, like, again, I would have liked a little more. They did a little past and backgroundy and stuff like that, but, you know, and they at one point they flash back to when Trish is trying to tell Jessica to be a superhero and she has the jewel costume,
which is funny.
Yeah, but I would have liked to have seen, like, it's hard not to compare this to Daredevil, but similar to the stick episode of Daredevil where we get a little more origin and all this sort of stuff. I felt as if they stretched out Jessica's origin, so you had to piece it together over several different episodes, which was rough.
Right.
But yeah, it was good. It was good.
I liked her best friend Trish, the Hellcat character.
So that was not in the comics, right, Connor?
No, in the comics it was Ms. Marvel.
Yeah,
that was originally when ABC was going to do. Do you remember when ABC Family was going to do, AKA Jessica Jones? Remember that?
Right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
That was originally going to be Jessica Jones and Carol Danvers, but then they decided to make Carol Danvers a movie character, so they got rid of her out of this show and brought in Patricia Walker, which Hellcat was one of those characters I always like.
Yeah.
And Trish Walker is actually a really interesting character historically. She started off as a romance comic character.
Oh, interesting.
At Marvel, or Marvel's romance comics, not a superhero, just a romance character. It was Patsy Walker.
Patsy Walker, yep.
And then in the '70s, they said let's bring her to the Marvel universe, and so they made her into, they brought her into that. So she actually started her life as a romance character. So that sort of worked with her arc here. You know, she's the child actor who had the Patsy show.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as a kid, then becomes more of a serious. And she's really into being a superhero. They're clearly setting that up for a future season.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, with her training and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
I like the actress. I thought she was really fun as a character.
Yeah, she's good.
I thought this one of the things that one of the headlines I had read sort of tickled my brain, and it really resonated with me, that this is, like, you really got the sense of the internet with this show, this lack of privacy, the prying eyes, when she's walking down the streets and she doesn't know who's watching her. For Killgrave.
Yep. Yeah.
You get this real human foreboding on, I don't feel like I'm in control of my destiny. I don't know who's looking at me. I don't know who's watching me. I don't know who's around me. And it was kind of really elegantly done, and it did add to that sort of creep factor. And it just was really, really interesting to see it sort of physicalized like that. Because what's wonderful, she uses technology in the right way, but And she's using it. It was fun to see technology used in appropriate ways in terms of her searching and on the computers and all that crap. But there was this sense of being alone in this crowded world, and made that loneliness even more severe given the problems that she was having. And I think that was one of the things I really liked about the tone, was how lonely one could be even in the most crowded city block. And that sense of, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm just trying to keep it together. And you can see that she's just trying to keep it together. All the drinking and all that stuff, just, I feel like everybody's sort of been that way, where they just don't know which way to turn. And it was really, I thought that those quiet moments where she's just watching and is scared made the tension really great, especially in the first part of the series when she doesn't have much control of what's going on around her. Yeah. And so that was one thing I really appreciated about it.
And the thing was, once, again, comparing it to Daredevil, you know, like, where we went, like, five episodes before we ever even saw Kingpin.
Yep.
you know, before we saw Fisk. And that, you know, they followed a similar model where you get hints and callbacks and references, and, you know, Kilgrave doesn't really become apparent until the middle of the series. But once it was on, like, I really enjoyed the chess game and really enjoyed the him trying to get at her, her trying to get at him. And yes, it was weird and random that Nuke had a torture room, but it worked on some level. And you know, and then of course it all goes to shit, which, you know, is going to happen, you know. So I like the moving back and forth, but it just got a little too repetitive.
I thought
the best moment was when Kilgrave bought her house and brought her in. Like, that whole sequence was great.
That part was really creepy when they played house for a while, and then he decided he was going to be a superhero with her. That was all really super creepy.
That was a really wonderful way to end that episode too, because she walks into the house and is reacting, and we all know what he's done, but then the episode ends, and it was a really great way to end that. Yeah, that whole sequence was that was fun. It is so funny. It's like, what is it with these shows and their little secret rooms for the bad guys, the Arrow and Flash? It's like,
oh yeah, I love those.
It's hilarious.
The weird torture room was just weird. I mean,
he built it.
Yeah, I know he built it, but he built it for Kilgrave or before Kilgrave? Kilgrave. Yeah, that's weird.
The secret, the super soldier thing, I felt like I had gone to the bathroom at a bad point and didn't press pause. Where did it it seemed to come out of nowhere. Suddenly he had all these buddies.
Yes, all of a sudden he had, yeah.
I didn't know if they were military people that it was like they forgot to put a scene in, and I knew
when,
that.
And when he got hurt and went to the hospital, and he's like, "No, call Kozlov, call," and like, "Who?" And like, I understand that. That's why I think that's feeding into the next series.
Yeah,
because it was just so random and just seemed so pasted in. Like, it reminded me.
That part will definitely carry over because that ties into who Jessica Jones is with the IGH and the car accident and the medical records being the same
as his company and
her medical records. So that'll all definitely tie in for season two.
Yeah, or maybe even Daredevil, who knows? I mean, because the thing is that you're talking about ex-military, and Punisher is ex-military, and we know Punisher's going to Daredevil, so it's.
I don't see this tying in together with any of this.
Well, and that was the thing too. That's what drove me crazy as well too, which is that, okay, so this all takes place in Hell's Kitchen, or supposed to, even though Luke's bar was on Tompkins, but whatever. In real life,
it looked more like it was taking place in Tribeca, West Village.
It looked Lower East Side or West Village. Yeah, definitely, but. So technically, it's all in Hell's Kitchen.
I don't think it was Hell's Kitchen. I think I misspoke in the beginning. I think it takes place in the Village.
Oh, really? You think so?
I don't think all these are meant to.
They never mention Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, I think they're just in the Village.
Oh, okay, yeah. Maybe they are.
That makes a lot of sense.
But it was not until the last episode where we get a cameo from Rosario Dawson,
which I thought was great.
Yeah,
which is a great kind of bridge. But even early, like with Hogarth as the lawyer, who, by the way, is a character who's based on a character from the Marvel comics, by the way. But it was a man.
I think it was Will Hogarth or something.
Yeah, Will Hogarth, who was Iron Fist's estate.
That's right.
The ward of Iron Fist's estate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so when we first got in, like, okay, she works for Hogarth as a lawyer. I'm like, oh, they're lawyers. Surely we'll have Charlie Cox will come on at some point. And the fact that it never happened made me super disappointed.
There was a little bit of, I was distracted by that, and I was really wondering about why I felt that way. And I was like, I thought maybe he might appear. I kept looking for him, Daredevil, or just Matt at the end. I thought Dawson might call him or something, and it distracted me. But I thought maybe they didn't do it because they didn't want to hand over the show.
Yeah, it's got to be her.
That, but it's so simple, and it's just so, you just have one courtroom scene where he's there, and it's like that's such a way to give you the glee of the shared universe.
I totally agree. It would have been wonderful to see it. At least I kept wanting him to be walking out of the cop station or something, and I just, you know, it's like any other, when you see these shows, if it's this big of a problem, you think Daredevil would at least be sniffing around, right? It just, it's like when
big city, it's a big city.
I'm looking online. There's another character. There's a cop who was a cop also in Daredevil, is a cop in this as well.
Oh, really? Well, that's they all look the same.
But it's the idea that after these five series, then the number five is the Defenders.
Right, so it's it gets a little wonky. So the idea originally was Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and then they come together in Defenders. But now, obviously, we're getting a season two of Daredevil, which is shooting right now.
Yeah.
if you believe the what Netflix says, this is also very popular. That they'll get a season two of this. We don't know. We just know that they're all going to come together eventually.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm primed and ready for the Luke Cage series. Primed and ready.
Actually, I thought about it when I was not upset but disappointed that he went away. I thought, well, okay, because he's going to have his own series.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give too much of him to this because it's her show.
Yeah, I guess I could.
But now, if he has his own series, she's got to be in it.
Right.
It's a prequel.
Or he's gone. Before. You know, when he's gone for 8 episodes or whatever it was.
Or she's busy.
Right. She's just really busy.
Yeah, she's really.
I loved the little mini the window always being broken. Like, yes. You really? And I'm learning a lot about the construction of apartments in New York City. How the walls are made.
That was or how flimsily the walls were made. That's there was a lot of drywall in the series, by the way. But yeah, no, the gag of the window being broken on the door is one of the good carryovers from the comics. That was nice to see that come through because that was the same thing that happened in the comics.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if honestly, if you ask me, the roughest I had with it is the fact that it felt stretched out. It felt too stretched out too long. I felt as if it could have been 6 to 8 episodes, and I would have been satisfied. And it's just a shame that Kilgrave died.
Okay, let's talk about that, because I thought I had a lot of conflicting thoughts about that. So
okay,
so they have the final battle on the docks,
right?
And Jessica kills Kilgrave, which I thought was I thought that whole sequence was really great.
Yeah, in a Man of Steel-esque head neck snap. Yeah.
Right.
At first, I was really super bummed about it because he is such a great character. But then I thought, okay, let's really think about this. So how much more of this are we actually going to get?
Yeah.
You know, she's going to show up again in the Luke Cage series. She may not show up in Iron Fist. She'll show up in the Defenders. She may get a second run.
Right.
Maybe not. Probably not a third run.
Right.
For any of these. So realistically.
How much to the well do you want to go to?
I mean, you don't want her facing Kilgrave her entire time.
No. Yeah, it's true.
Even though Kilgrave is her Joker, her Lex Luthor, you know, her Doctor Doom. We're really never going to see these characters again in this way beyond at least one more, maybe two more series,
And to be honest, I don't think I could handle another season of Jessica.
Well, and also it's like they kind of always leave them wanting more, right? If then it would become like, oh, I wonder what kind of weird thing he's going to make people do this time. Right. I mean, and you know, let's face it, we did have the dude with both arms get cut off and the dude putting the arm in the trash disposal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I got it. The guy is fucked up and twisted. And it's like, I don't want to see it anymore. And like, literally, I was in, not to mention the needle in the eyeball thing.
Oh.
Some of that shit was just unbelievable. There were some parts of the show that I was really like, oh my fucking God, what the hell?
And we touched on it earlier, but talking about Kilgrave and the use of the powers. But I thought, but not so much the use of the powers, but also his just as a manipulator.
Yeah,
like being like talking to Jessica and explaining his side of it, how he was abandoned and how he, you know, like he didn't ask for this and he never told anyone to kill themselves. Like he, you know, like the way he justifies what he's done, and then when in a scenario when he's in like the torture room and someone new comes in and he's like, "You've got to help me," you know, like he's playing innocent and like playing to the audience every time. I thought that like just like not only is he got the mind control thing down, but is just Machiavellian and a manipulator in such a way that is. I can respect, you know, like really, really well done. Like, wow. Yeah.
He's a great character. And it is sad when he dies, but I think you had to do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's hanging over the whole series.
Right.
Or whatever other series, if there is another series. And we may never get one. They may never do another one. So, you know, you gotta do with the best thing you've got now. Because often that's the Marvel trap we talk about with the movies, right? Is they're all constantly looking ahead.
Right.
Yeah. And they never feel like they end on their own.
Yeah, they're never in the now.
You got to end that story now. And if they get another 13 episodes and do you know, deal with this rogue military group, and that's all you'll probably get. And that's fine.
Right.
Yeah, and it would be interesting. It'd be fine if they did another season, but it would be interesting to see what would happen to her character. I mean, I think Ritter did a fantastic job of showing pain and grief and anger in a way that was I really identified with, but like externally, like she definitely hit a lot of the same notes over and over again. Like she was just kind of a grump most of the time. So do we want more of that? It would have to be different somehow. And you get a hint of this more formal agency happening with the, at the very end when he picks up the phone and how can we help you?
Right.
And so I am interested in that. And I
it's like her friends are going to force some right. normalcy onto her.
That's right.
And Malcolm, we were going to talk about Malcolm. He's the one who says that on the phone. He's the one who starts off as sort of the typical junky neighbor who you'd see in the village.
Yeah.
And turns out he's actually was a normal, you know, high-functioning dude who Kilgrave turned into a junkie to, in order to monitor her. And I thought he was a great – he had a great, really great arc.
Yeah.
He kind of made the annoying neighbor stuff bearable as much as it possibly could.
Well, yeah. you really sympathize with him, that's for sure.
Yes.
His
life is ruined. It's just
I just mean dealing with those neighbors. I mean,
that was awful. No, but that was also interesting. Like, he wanted to be a social worker, and so like this gave him purpose to, you know, try to help the other victims and all that sort of that blows up in his face. But I like the ending where, you know, like it closes with, you know, Jessica's phone ringing off the hook and it's people looking for help and he answers the phone. Ellie's like, he's going to be her Karen Page, you know.
Right.
So that's cool, you know.
And it was interesting because I didn't get the sense that Jessica really wanted to deal with all those people.
No, that's why she wasn't answering the phone.
So it'll be interesting for her if she really wants to continue along this line of work, because that's the kind of phone calls you're going to get. So we'll see. I mean, she was great.
She was.
She, you know, she's one of those characters where you really, really empathize. I mean, she's just really having a hard go at it. And it's like you can see the self-medication with the alcohol and all that stuff, and it's like, man, and she never played the drunk, like
it was never comedic drunk. It was sad. It was sad drunk.
Yeah. And it was like whenever the bottle would come out, you're like, oh man, you know, it was really an interesting sort of picture of it. And then watching her at the bar, that first scene where she's just getting drunk at Luke's bar, like that was beautifully shot and really, I mean, in the direction of this. I remember when we talked about Daredevil, we were really into, you know, these fight sequences, which were unbelievable. Here, I thought there were these wonderful moments of stillness and just this gritty. There was a lot of time being taken with some of the shots. New York was a wonderful character again in this.
You could almost say that New York City was a character in this story.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
I'm just kidding. I'm joking. I mean, you could, but it's that cliche.
I mean, but it's just, you've walked those streets, you know. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's great that they get to use all those locations like that. I mean, we all used to.
Although we want to talk about nitpicks, there's one scene on the subway that was not a New York subway.
Yeah, it was. Was that the one? Was it Avenue?
I forget what it was earlier in the show, and it was early, when she broke the glass when she was felt like everyone was looking at her, and she was sitting on it, like the seats were blue, like it was clearly just a quote unquote subway set somewhere, and you know, and like it wasn't a New York City subway. As a New Yorker, I'm sorry, I nitpick at that, but
my final nitpick was when the girl rallied all the people in the support group together to go to her office. To Jessica's office. That really bugged me for some reason. Like, I'm tired of talking. Let's go see what she's up to. Like,
and they just followed her blindly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was weird. That was very weird. Yeah, that was
frustrating.
I don't know.
That whole support group thing, I got why it was there. We really did get to see how people's lives are ruined, even with the most innocuous thing. The one guy was there only because he gave up his coat.
Yeah.
But, like, you really did see how this was a psychological destructing force. But it went on. It was a little repetitive.
Wait, and why did the upstairs neighbors have to be? What, I guess they were incestuous,
like
twins,
weird Coen brothers-esque characters.
Yeah. Well,
if they're going to be weird for some sort of reason. Like he's wearing adult diapers for some reason, and it's like he's really good at banana bread. It felt like it was just weird to be weird. I didn't understand that part of it at all.
If I would have to rank my problems with it, I would say it being too long, followed by the lawyer's divorce, followed by the upstairs neighbors, followed by the support group. I'm sorry. I'll amend that. Too long, lawyer's divorce, nuke, upstairs neighbor. And I'll lump the upstairs neighbor and the support group in the same bullet point. There you go.
But that's
those are my – like, oh, my God. If I had to listen to the lawyer and her wife argue one more – like, seriously, it was so – and it like it culminated. It tied into the series exactly how I thought it was going to be. It wasn't a surprise. But why did it take 11 episodes?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That was painful.
I did think it was interesting when we got – Tennant having his monologue up on the top of that at the sort of the second to last of the last season, and we really see his brain working. Like, well, maybe I'll have her starve to death, or maybe I'll do this to her, or maybe I'll just kill her. Like, it was interesting when we got time away from Jessica, and that was really the only time where you saw him talking to himself, and I thought that was really interesting. There are a lot of things that happened that I was going, oh, I wonder why they did that, because it's not like I was ready to start thinking of him being more of a human being or anything like that. There are just some sequences where, like,
you felt like you were starting to sympathize with him, weren't you? You started to see his point of view.
You know, he's just a lonely guy, and he just doesn't know if people are doing things because he told them to or because he really wanted to, and that's tough.
It really makes you think when he explained that. He really made you think. I mean, like, it really did.
It's like an allegory for fame, right?
Yeah.
Are they really my friend? Yeah.
Because I'm famous or because they like me? And it's just, right. You know, there was a split second where I was like, oh, I feel kind of bad for it. No, I don't feel bad for him.
Did you guys know?
It was weird. It was two sort of oblique references to The Dark Knight in this one.
Really?
Yeah, at one point someone actually says, what doesn't kill you only makes you stranger.
Yeah,
she said that. And then later on, towards the end, someone said something that was, in essence, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Both lines were spoken by Jessica Jones.
Yes, yes.
And the villain line was done over a voiceover.
Yeah, it was. I was like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah. And Luke, I think, corrected her. Someone corrected her. Oh, no, it was the nuke guy corrected her stronger. And she's like, if you say so. and then finally Carrie Ann Moss clipped the wire.
Yeah.
And like, she knew that. How did she know that? Like, that I totally
yeah, that was that. A weird MacGuffin. That was like, why did the shock button in the torture room not work anymore? Okay, it must have been Hogarth by process elimination. Okay, why though? Was she under his control at that point? Or yeah, I don't know. That was weird. Not all plot points will make sense, Mike. the other little Easter egg for the Doctor Who people is that I guess when they're in the house playing house at some point when they have an argument, Kilgrave is talking to Jessica about his parents and whatever, and she tells him to grow up, and she goes, "You're not 10 anymore," and he was the 10th Doctor. So there you go. Grown. Hated the parents, by the way. Hated the parents.
Oh, really?
Like the dad, hated the mother. I just hated that role of playing with it or whatever. It was, I don't know. I didn't like that.
I did.
Like, why would they be holed up in a motel? Like, that didn't make any. And I believe at one point someone goes, it doesn't make any sense. Why are they here? I'm pretty sure someone was self-aware of the fact that it made no sense.
Ultimately, I really enjoyed it.
Strong.
B plus.
B plus. Yeah, strong B plus.
Wasn't quite where, like, with Daredevil, I could not stop watching it. This was like, I watch it in four different chunks, but those chunks were really enjoyable. And when it got to the last bit, after the second act, I guess you can't really break them into acts. After the second sort of middle part, I watched way more than I thought I was going to do in a row. I just kept watching it because I could.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So I thought this was very good. And Jessica Ritter did great. She's a welcome addition.
Kristen Ritter.
I'm sorry, Jessica Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. She was great. She was a strong female protagonist. It was awesome. It was great to see that. It was great to see her confident and like doing all the stuff. And I mean, like, it was very well done. It's just, I feel as if from a story point, Daredevil was stronger.
I mean, and do we think, just from a formatting, does it feel long because we watched it all at once and didn't have a week in between? Like, sometimes I feel like, oh, this is dragging. Well, yeah, it's dragging. It's the fourth one you've watched, and it's not doing the plot that you want to watch, right? But I'm wondering, like, to your point at the beginning, Ron, we talked about this, the Daredevil one. I would love it if they did two at a time over a 3-week or 4-week thing. Doing them all at once over 12, it makes it really hard to watch. It makes it really hard to talk about, and I think it actually sucks some of the dramatic tension out of it. Absolutely sucks the dramatic tension.
Yeah, because that moment that you ended on immediately gets resolved because you're just like, well, I'll just watch another one. I'll watch another one, you know. And it's like, you know, yeah, I struggle with the format. I understand why they're doing it. I understand that differentiates themselves, but I'm just comparing. I'm looking at season one of Daredevil, and I'm looking at the runtimes of the episodes, and we got 53, 53, 52, 52, 56. 48, 50, 53, 58, 57. Yeah, about the same lengths, 59, 60, 56. But for some reason, the episodes, like, I was aware of the fact that the episodes felt long for Jessica Jones. Like, and, Yeah, they're about the same length I'm looking at. They're all in the 50s or so. Actually, it looks like they're on the most part shorter than Daredevil, but they just felt longer. Because I think, because again, I think that this was eight episodes. Eight episodes, this would have been a powerhouse.
Yeah, so. I think we even talked a bit about that in Daredevil. I think I said it would have been nice if it was 10 episodes.
Yeah.
There were times when Daredevil was stretched as well.
Yeah.
I don't know where this number 13 comes from. I mean, if I'm Netflix, I will just make the number of episodes that the show needs. Right.
Yeah, it's weird. It's become, I don't know how it became that way, but it's become the number.
Yeah.
You know, they Breaking Bad used to be 2 13-episode segments. You know, I think Mad Men was as well. It's become 13 has become, and it may be because it's sort of half of a regular broadcast season, but
yeah,
that has become the sort of standard. Yeah. You know, 10 should be fine too.
Yeah.
You know, you could have easily lost 3 hours out of this and been fine.
I cut the entire divorce. The entire divorce.
Well, it just didn't propel. That's like you were saying earlier. The mini plots that they did have didn't propel the action. They just sort of sucked the air out of the room.
Yeah.
They slowed things down as opposed to, I had forgotten about this. Oh, right. Let's watch this part. You know?
Yeah. So, but that said, it was strong.
That said, we're lucky to have this show.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed.
On the whole, really great.
Yep. On the whole, great. I can't wait for the next one.
So Luke Cage is scheduled for early 2016, which I imagine will be around the same time of year that Daredevil came out, and then that means we'll be stuffing Iron Fist in around turkey time next year.
Sounds like that's the schedule they're on. So. Yeah.
And you said ABC Family, this is going to be called AKA?
Jessica Jones.
The episode titles are AKA and then the episode title, yeah. They couldn't call it Alias because Alias.
I think originally they were going to call this AKA Jessica Jones as well, but they just shortened it to Jessica Jones.
Yeah, smart.
I wonder if they'll do a reprint of the Alias books and have the Jessica Jones logo in it or something, because the books
I've been
rereading the first trade, and that book is awesome. I forgot how good it is. It's such a good read.
Yeah, they repackaged them and re-released them with the Jessica Jones logo on it. I'm pretty sure. I think I saw that in the shop the other day.
Connor reminded me that in the books she was dating Ant-Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that would have been so rad if that had actually happened. So good.
Yeah.
But, Oh, well.
A lot of things happened.
It's super fun.
If you've watched this show, like many people did, and you haven't read those original Bendis Gatos books. It's Gatos, right?
Yeah, it was Michael Gatos. Yeah. That had the great sequence when they did the flashback to when Jessica was completely under Kilgrave's control, and remember the art switched to Bagley?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really well done. That was really, really well done. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Connor, I bet you're right. I bet you IGH is in human growth hormone because yes. I'm looking at the story arcs of the Alias comic in issue 10 and issue 16 and 21 are all around mutant growth hormone.
Mm. So there you go. So now it's in human growth hormone.
Yeah, I bet you that is.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Ron.
And then cough and cough and cough.
Jessica.
Check those books out. If you want to talk about this show, you can go to iFanboy.com. There'll be a post there where you can share your thoughts on Jessica Jones and what you're looking for from Luke Cage. And I suspect it'll be an origin story, Ron.
Jessica.
I think we'll go back in time for Luke Cage. That's all.
Hey, as far as an origin story, all you need is him putting the saw to his midsection.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I loved when they both realized they could have unfettered sex with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
a great moment. So anyway, go to iFanboy.com. You can talk about this show there. And don't forget to check out our weekly podcast, iFanboy Pick a League Podcast, where Ron, Josh, and I talk about the latest in comics. And we'll be back next year when Luke Cage comes back. Ron will spend a little time talking about how handsome he thinks he is.
He's a very handsome man. The thing is, he's not just handsome. He's also charming. He's very charming. He's very welcoming. He's soothing, you know?
Smooth skin. For being unbreakable. I mean, my God. No pores.
Yeah.
It's like, jeez. So.
And they had no problem showing him off. Like that scene where he was in the towel, there was no reason for him to be in a towel in that scene.
Listen, if I had skin like that, I would never wear a shirt.
Yeah. He definitely bulked up between The Good Wife and this.
Yes, he did. I did notice that. Yes.
Yeah. Wait, what is the next movie thing? I guess Star Wars would be it, and then we go dry until...
Yeah.
The next film after Star Wars will be Batman v Superman.
Wow.
Oh, God. Do I have to watch that, Connor?
Let's talk about that offline.
Yeah.
Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Mike.
Jessica.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.